see. This is the second session of the interview with Margaret Monroe. It's now the 22nd of March, 1988. And you're going to talk about the Faye Macbeth Institute on Aging to begin with. And
that's
you've been
right.
Getting, showing me some papers that you have.
Right.
Which I'll have in the file.
Right. If you want to switch that off a moment, I've got to... And we've just made the discovery that the institute here was organized in 1973 and was designed to stimulate the preparation of specialists in gerontology, both at the practitioner and research levels. Martin Loeb was the director. Vivian Wood came on to the faculty, I think, about that time with her specialty in human development. And she was the, I guess I thought of her, and most people did, as the associate director. I don't recall what the formal title, what her formal title became as time went on, but I expect it was associate director. And she conducted and stimulated research on aging in an interdisciplinary style. I participated or attempted to participate in one such piece of research that interviewed older women, because this was Vivian Wood's specialty, mm-hmm. was the investigations into older women. And she had a solid base of population in Madison area that she used. And we had quite an extensive interview plan.
Well, how did you get started on that?
Well, this was probably the third or fourth year of the institute. So that pushed it on into 78, 79, somewhere in there. And Vivian had the idea, drew the people together whom she had talked with individually, and we met as a total group. Probably, I think I went to meetings maybe four times, five times in the process of developing the plan for this research. People from family resources, from psychology, from social work, and I, of course, from the library school, and I don't remember the other people, but there were several people who were teaming it and working together. And somebody was going into sex habits. And I recall with considerable amusement and a little bit of dismay, they're challenging my asking sensitive questions about the library. And they, in my absence at one of the meetings, they removed my crucial question. But they said it was too sensitive to ask, do you use the public library? However, they were asking people such other questions as, in your sexual relationships, who gets the better of the deal, you or your partner? That, it seems, was not a sensitive question. So, you know, it all depends upon the point of view. So our interdisciplinary approach to research was educational to us all. And I never really did trouble to do much with the findings of the few questions that I had, because my key question was not there. Mm-hmm. And so it was not going to test hypotheses that I had to test and so on.
They felt that people would feel, if they weren't using the public library, that they were admitting something bad about
that
themselves.
Is right.
And it would make them
That's
uncomfortable.
Right. That's
I
right.
I see. Oh. What a
But they never bothered to explain that. They just assumed everybody would know that's far too sensitive a question.
And did you fuss very much about it?
I did momentarily, and then because of my general view of the situation, I decided, well, so be it. And so I didn't push that hard. It was almost too late by that time, too. It was the last formulation, and it wouldn't have done much good to make a change. Well, let's go back to the Faye Macbeth Institute,
right,
per se.
Yes.
And it was indeed interdisciplinary in its structure. And as I've given you some of the materials here, you can see that people are represented from the School of Business, the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences,
mm-hmm.
Family Resources, College of Engineering, School of Allied Health Medical School. Yes, I really felt the medical school's involvement was very, very useful. And Dr. Everett Smith, whose name I don't see on this particular list, became one of the very supportive and helpful people in advancing, yes, he is here. He was then an assistant clinical professor,
mm-hmm.
In preventive medicine. And a great deal happened on campus about the same time in the health area, and much of it related, I'm sure, to the Institute, the Faye Macbeth Institute program. Programs for men and then separately for women between something like 45 and 55 were open to do a longitudinal study to see what will exercise do to delay aging, to cut down heart attacks, et cetera, et cetera.
That's age 35 to 65.
Was that 35?
I've been in it for 9 years.
Is that right?
Mm.
And that was a very, very, I was just too old. They wouldn't let me do it. So I fall apart on my own. But I think that some very good things of this kind came and out of that program. And I think Dr. Everett Smith was, to a large extent, responsible. Emily Campbell on the School of Nursing faculty was someone whom I identify as very definitely involved. She was associate professor in the School of Nursing. Val Prock, who was then dean, got involved, I don't think as directly, personally in the research, perhaps as Emily Campbell did. And then in the College of Letters and Science, all kinds of people from anthropology and history, the Library School, which I represented, but many, many from the School of Social Work, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And law school, Marigold Melly was involved. So it was a well put together thing. Most of this was the product of the work of Vivian Wood.
Yeah.
Who went around the campus, used every contact she had. She had to persuade me. She worked for 2 years before I would be willing to get myself involved in this, because I had very firm convictions that in library service, you do not serve older adults on a separate category.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like everybody else. Which means totally different. The range of people's reading interests and age is as wide as you could possibly conceive. And there were no generalizations to be made. Well, finally, I began to recognize that that wasn't the only factor that should be taken into account. And I also realized that older people were indeed segregating themselves in many of the community activities, and the rise in popularity increasingly of senior centers demonstrated this, and many people felt more comfortable with their own generation when that generation was being discriminated against in the community as a whole. So, all right, then if that's the way it is, I was ready to go in there and take a look. In the process of this, I conducted some research throughout the state of Wisconsin. I investigated the use of media in nursing homes because nursing homes were a target of acute criticism for so many years. The time that I proposed to do this was 1974-75, I guess. It was a particularly sensitive period, so I was not allowed to talk with residents. I guess they would call them patients, but I call them residents. Unless they were chosen by the administration for me to talk with. All right, I had to accept the environment that was, and I went ahead and did it. So that much, the survey really was the survey of the what the administrators and activity directors knew about the use of media. What they proposed, what they made available, and what they knew to be happening on its own. It was a good, it was very, very useful to me, because what I needed to do was to get familiar enough with the field of aging to have something to teach. If I was going to be active and useful to public librarians in serving older adults, I needed to understand older adults, and I had not really paid vast attention to this before. So in addition to studying nursing home use of media, and that included books, newspapers, radio, television, I also surveyed public library services to older adults in the state of Wisconsin at the same time. And that gave me a pretty good look in an updating way on a study that had been done 5 years earlier in Cleveland, Ohio. So that I had this kind of thing to contribute in my own professional field as well as my own education about the use of media in nursing homes. Well, as a result of that year of preparation, I then made the proposal to the Institute on Aging for funding for a preparation of experienced degreed librarians in the specialty of service to older adults. And we had a group of, what was it, 8 or 10, I've kind of forgotten now, people who came for a full year of study on library service to aging. Well, needless to say, when the instructor is just breaking into the field, the learning is very exciting, because everybody is learning. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be a very good thing. And we had, I guess I have 6 names here for those courses. And we brought people in to speak to the student group broadly, as well as to these 6 specialists. And I felt, and I think they felt, that that was a useful mm-hmm. year. We continued this kind of preparation of advanced librarians over the next 2 years. And then I felt that things had happened in the public library field that made it no longer a feasible thing to do, because what we found was that public libraries were undergoing the drain of funds away from educational purposes and communities. This was 1977, 1976, 1978. And we, when we started out, we had lots of applicants. And at the end of that 3-year period, we had none. And it wasn't the quality of the program, although one might assume it could be, but I don't think that it was. Basically, it was a function of the public library situation. Specialists would no longer be hired. They could not afford to do this, nor could they afford to release, nor could practitioners afford to give up a job, because they couldn't be sure they'd get one. And 3 years prior, they could have. So it was an interesting economic revolution that took place within the library field that cut that off. So what happened? Well, that didn't stop people from wanting to know, and I began devising what we call the extension type courses that I would teach on campus weekends only, and have 5 weekends from Friday through Saturday into Sunday morning. And people would come down. Well, when we did the Friday, I guess we started Thursday night and all day Friday and Saturday. Then they had Saturday evening in Madison. And for the Outlanders in Wisconsin, that was great. So we had a lot of people coming for that kind of thing. And I played different patterns of recruiting interested people to study that also gave them benefits of another kind.
Good idea.
And I figured at the end that we had well over 100 public librarians practicing in Wisconsin who had come and taken a course. Mm-hmm. They had either had a course in library service to older adults or reading interests of older people or something of that kind, because I varied the context. As time went, I focused more and more on reading interests, and I did a fair amount of research on that to book research in the fields of gerontology, social gerontology, and education and librarianship to find out what were people in older years having to do that would impel them toward getting help from books. And that identification of what I call the life tasks of aging was the core around which the courses developed and around which I later, a year after my retirement, I was able to finish up the book on that, The Challenge of Aging. And so that I felt that the Institute had served me very well in various ways, in getting me into a new field that did need attention, in providing me with enough funding to bring people in and learn about this and take it out, and then they'd report back their experience, and we developed a body of knowledge about reading and older years that was valuable. And beyond that, I was getting older. I was approaching retirement, and I had found that teaching 5 major courses a year and doing extension activities and conducting research on a regular basis was more than my aging frame was going to deal with. So this provided me with funding for the summers, so that I could get ready, I could do some of the things with pay and not have to again teach 2 courses in the summer to make that necessary contribution to my retirement base. So it was very interesting, a combination of personal and professional benefits that flowed from this. I did serve on the executive committee for a period of time. I think it might have been 2 years, it could have been 3. And it was at a time when there was a review of the Faye Macbeth Institute on Aging and Adult Life by the funders of that institute, the Faye Macbeth Foundation in Milwaukee. I guess it's called the Macbeth Foundation in Milwaukee. And there were some notable people on the board there who were deeply interested in nursing homes at that time, and but also interested in seeing the concern for social gerontology and in its various fields take root on campus. Now, how did this really take root? We had to sign we had to vote in our faculty in the Larmer School. We had to vote on being part of a multidisciplinary graduate research training program in aging. And we did, and it's affirmed, and that was done in 1971. It must be 77. I don't I'm sure it wasn't 71. And it's what it says, but I don't believe it. And at any rate, the library school then seemed to be committed, and other departments had to do the same kind of thing. Whether that meant that once the funds dried up, the courses would be taught by those departments was a very open question. The courses were taught in the library school until my retirement, and then there was no one able to teach them. Mm-hmm. So they were dropped. So it was not a long-term commitment. It was a commitment for the duration of the availability of the one instructor who was involved. However, when you look at a school of social work with about 8 people on the faculty involved, and Martin Loeb, as head of the institute, had been director of the school of social work, and Vivian Wood was on the social work faculty. There, the continuance has been built in, and it's very clear. When the review team came to Madison, I was very interested in their style of operating. They were very knowledgeable people. I think Catherine Cleary was probably gave leadership to this, and I just had enormous regard for her capacity in dealing with this. And they had private interviews, and they had general group conversations, and they went around and observed and did all the usual things. And I think that they saw very well what the situation was, that to a large extent, the level of commitment that I've indicated for the library school, with the exception of a few departments, was probably the normal level of commitment. Medicine would have liked more funding if they were going to get involved. Mm-hmm. And that gradually came about from the federal government. And social work remained involved, and education, School of Education, had several departments that were interested and remained involved, and Family Resources and Consumer Sciences likewise. So there was a cluster that remains now very much the heart of it. Sociology was barely involved at first, but became increasingly so, and when Martin Loeb retired from his directorship of this, one of the succeeding people was David Featherman from sociology, and I understand that he is in his last year now, and it will probably move to the medical field for heading up, which seems likely. There was always a concern by people not of the medical sciences that if it were dominated by the medical group, we would not have the human services mm-hmm. emphasis that most of the people conducting research there were concerned about. So there was always this sense of balance and of degree of tension in a relaxed sort of way, and it was never a problem, but it was a concern about them. I think that the recommendation that came from that review team was very valuable. I think it threw Martin Loeb for the moment, because it said Macbeth Foundation will not continue to provide the basic support for the institute. The university should be ready to do that. We will be prepared to carry special projects that you may come to us with, but not the basic. Well, that did make a major shift in the structure of funding for the institute, and I don't blame Loeb for recognizing that this was happening, but as we talked it over, I felt and I think he became persuaded that this really was a wonderful thing for that group to have done, because they put it on the line and the university had to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. They couldn't say, well, look, this is being taken care of outside. And indeed, they did come through, not at the level that we had had, but still far beyond the earlier level of funding from the university for the Institute on Aging. So that I think it accomplished the thing that had to be accomplished, which was to institutionalize it in the university and not make it always an extra thing. So I think maybe that's what I have to tell you about this.
What did the Institute do that you wouldn't, it got you interested clearly, so that's, that people wouldn't have done on their own, what with the developing field of interest in aging?
Well, the developing interest in the field of aging back in the 70s had to be stimulated. Aging is not a happy topic. People avoid it. They have no natural interest in aging, and that's the truth. And it still is true in the general public at this time, to be sure, because Fay Macbeth was doing what it was, and the federal government through the Older Americans Act was doing what it was doing with research grants and fellowships, scholarships for students, that the whole 1970s became a big push, but it took a kick of the most tremendous impact to get people to move in this direction. It just did.
But from what you say, it in fact it didn't, except in a few departments, and in for instance in the library school it was dropped as when you left. So wouldn't these people have, in fact, done this on their own? It provided some grants for research, is that all
yes,
right?
That's right. And that's very crucial.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. I would not have gone on my own to do this.
Mm.
Not unless I could have gotten the funding that allowed me the time to do it. No, I couldn't afford to.
Mm-hmm.
Life is too competitive on the campus to permit you to do that.
Did you talk to people about your research? Did you get help from people in the Institute helping you frame it, or reactions to what you were doing?
Particularly reactions and, right. But largely I was, I think Vivian Wood and I worked very closely together from time to time. And she remained really the connecting point
mm-hmm.
for the Institute with the Human Services Group, no question.
You had, I suppose, colloquia.
Within the library school?
No, the Institute.
Oh, yes, and those have been going on for a long time now, and they continue. The Martin Loeb Fund, which was established in his memory after his death, what, 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Has supplied speakers regularly. That is now, I think, used up. I don't know what's going to happen when that kind of funding dries up. It's very hard to know. I think you're absolutely right that in 1988, which is 15 years after the Institute was founded, the atmosphere is totally different.
Wait.
But now I think it's one of the hot political topics, no question. And as an outcome of what I have done with the Institute, now that I am retired, and I spend a great deal of my time, both before retirement and since, talking with public librarians about service to aging. And I came to recognize that special benefits for people just because they're old is a very dangerous concept over the long term. And when we are going to be 20 to 25% over 65, we're going to be in trouble if we don't readjust our thinking. So I have just concluded 2 years now of working not through a public library and not through the university primarily, but through the Madison Senior Center to have a 2-year program in the Challenge of the Aging Society.
Yes, I think you talked about that last time.
Yeah, that's right. And so that's a direct outgrowth of the experiences mm-hmm. that I had with the Institute.
But was there interdisciplinary research as a result of the Institute?
Yes, there was at the time. How much of that was research? Of course, it depends on how you define interdisciplinary research. If you have a research tool that combines the questions that so-and-so wants from this angle and somebody else wants from another angle, I'm not sure that's interdisciplinary research in the truest sense. And whether there was much of the interdisciplinary research, I suppose that Mary Wiley may have conducted some of that because of her rooting in the School of Social Work and in urban planning. Mm-hmm. And you might want to talk with Mary Wiley about her experience in the Institute and in interdisciplinary research. I'd be interested in what she would say.
The grant was turned, the grant proposal you said, it was 1977.
For the preparation of researchers. Yeah.
No, it's
that's
it's,
just something within the Institute.
Yes.
Yes, that was a particular thing that never did get funded, per se, as I recall it. But I found it an interesting analysis of the
because it's quite
the
critical.
Weaknesses. That's right. And to a large extent, there was a lot of politics in interdisciplinary research, which I had not anticipated. I didn't go into that to have to fight my way through, in addition to designing an inquiry. So,
what were the politics?
I didn't stay to find out too much. I just knew that I had been absent one meeting and came back and found my key question gone.
I see.
Okay, yeah. So there we are, and it wasn't that crucial. It was too late for me to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And so I just never used the results of the other questions of mine that had been turned in. There was no point because the major inquiry, the question I'd, and do you use the public library, that was deemed too sensitive a question. So we didn't have that.
Okay. Well, that is interesting. I'm glad you
now,
talked
maybe
about that.
Now, maybe there's some other things we should be talking about, too. You have your little list of things because I don't find mine here. All right, good. Let me say a word about the TAA.
Yeah, now you just spoke very briefly about it last time and said when the TAA tried to organize in the library school that the students said were perfectly happy in.
And they never could organize. The TAA brought their first case that was kind of a trial from their point of view. They brought it against the library school. We had a special project on adult reading that was funded by federal funds and had its own director, and she operated quite independently. Nobody was overseeing what she was doing. But they brought the case on a personnel matter that related to that project, and somebody had been hired and was given a commitment of, I guess, something like, I don't know, I'm making a guess, about 6 months appointment. And at the end of 2 months was fired. And the TAA was representing that person in a request for back pay for that period. And I was called upon by the TAA group that was being responsible for this case, and they made their presentation. And I did not have, because I didn't know, they were inexperienced. They had not told me what was going, what was the thing they were coming with. So I did not have the director of the project with me. I conferred separately then with the director of the project, who confirmed the details, and with whom I talked about this, and who conceded that, yes, well, probably, but for very good reasons, the person had been fired. And I said, but nevertheless, we do have this sense of an absolute commitment which has been broken, and the word was, yes, I guess we do. So we took the funding from the project and paid the person. Now, that was a minor kind of thing in a way, but it was major for the TAA. It was their first case, and they won. Somebody took them seriously. And that was probably disaster on campus. No, it really
fascinating. You don't remember who presented the case, do you?
No, I don't. I don't.
Was it a woman or a man? Or?
It was a young man. And who it was, I have no idea. And what makes it funny, and why I don't remember some of the things, is that I had a broken back, and I was lying at home on my bed flat for a month, and they waited upon me in my bedroom. However, it was all made very professional, so, you know, the thing just took place the way, same way it would in the office. And
were they polite?
Oh, yes, very mm-hmm. polite, very polite. And I was polite to them. And no, it was not. It was not a bitterly contested thing, because it just made sense that if you have a written commitment and you go back on it, you have to have some documentation.
Yes.
And we had no documentation of reasons for this change, and so we did far better to sacrifice the funds than to raise a big to-do and go to court, and you know.
Yeah. Yes. Good.
I thought. Well, that's on the TAA. I also said I'd make a comment or two about the ratio of men to women on the library school's faculty. When I came to the faculty as director of the school in 63, I was a very autocratic director. And the directors had been autocratic to a large extent. It was a one-person show in a way. And there were four people on the faculty who had been on the faculty for some time. And then a new additional person joined the faculty as a part-timer that year. Muriel Fuller came on, and then we worked to make her a full-time half-time joint appointment with extension later. So there were six of us, five women and one man, mm-hmm. on a library school faculty, where one of the problems of library education was over-feminization, just as it had been in the profession itself. The profession was changing, was becoming much more near normal distribution. We probably had up to 25 to 30% of the students were men to 75 to 80% women. But we were not doing any model setting by our faculty mm-hmm. structure. Mm-hmm. And I found that it was imperative for me to look for men for the faculty. And we moved it so that I guess it's about 50-50 now. And we've maintained the women as well as the men. But we needed also to change, when I came in 63, we needed to change the quality of library education that was available, improve it, sophisticate it, mature it in many, many ways, bringing in new concepts and tying things together in styles different from the way they had been before. And it was therefore important to get the male point of view, the differences in background, and we were able to look for and secure eventually people in the science library field, in special libraries, and in university libraries, where men tended to dominate more than women in those fields of practice. And that was very, very helpful to us. I should point out that we also hired women in special libraries and in university libraries field. So Vlasta Karan came on as a special librarian, and Dorothea Scott was a university library background. And these were very important people to have, because it meant that we weren't handing over to men a field, but we were tapping their experience and perspectives, but keeping the thing in balance, I think, pretty much as we went. I've never felt the need to apologize for looking for men for the faculty, very explicitly looking, because it was necessary to rebuild the credibility of our school in the national view. And we did. We were, I think I may have commented to you the last time that we were considered to be close to unaccreditable when I arrived, and 7 years later when I gave up the directorship, we were being appraised in the top quarter of the schools and the only one of the non-doctoral schools to be so listed. So, okay, we'd made the turnaround, and it took a lot of different things. Men is only one aspect. One of them was interdisciplinary study, and I wanted to comment to you on that, because I found when I came to the Madison campus a flexibility that I had not had on my previous campus at all, in going, sending students to take courses in other departments and being able to work as a team with other people. And I turned to the School of Social Work and to the School of Education, both. I served on the faculty of the School of Education in Stiles' day, when Stiles was dean. And this was one of his main points. He got into big accreditation arguments over why do you list all these people from other fields into your faculty. And I found that it was very good. My counterparts were in adult education and in social work. And so that I had good contacts there. But then increasingly, I found communication very, very important. And communication theory was very important to us. So the School of Journalism became one of our very close collaborators. And our master's students were required to take 3 credits out of the professional field of our of library science, and encouraged to take as much as 6 credits. We have such a small number of credits required, we couldn't go beyond that. But in our specialist and doctoral programs, we found the greatest of help in the interdisciplinary approach, and our cooperative doctorate with the School of Education, with journalism, with the two that we worked with most regularly, and then those two, we were able to gain the experiences that we as a faculty needed in administering a doctoral program. And it strengthened us so that by 1971 we were in a position to move into responsibility for our own program. And I just felt that, and the specialist program, which is the master's, the post-master year of study, was especially usefully served in the area studies, with the area studies, and I may have commented on that before. The other point that I wanted to talk with you about was the Coordinating Committee on Higher Education.
Well, if you're, that's presumably not on the library training. I have a couple of questions.
The Coordinating Committee is not?
Well, it's not about your library faculty and students, is it?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Then I will save my questions.
All right. The Coordinating Committee on Higher Education probably has a long history, which I know nothing about. But I know it in relation to library education. Because when I came to the faculty in 63, I was unaware of the CCHE. But I became apprised of it somewhere along, maybe in the next 2 years. And a committee was organized under the coordinating committee of library educators from the state university system and the University of Wisconsin system. Mm-hmm. This was before merger. And I found very interesting the fact that it was chaired by a staff member of the Coordinating Committee mm-hmm. on Higher Education. It was composed of about 8 people, 2 of whom represented master's degree programs, myself and the person from Milwaukee. And 6 people from undergraduate programs in the state universities. There was an assumption in any group of 8 people that you work either toward consensus or vote, right? How do you make decisions? We were supposed to be planning mm-hmm. library education for the state. And the numbers of people representing the state institutions dominated the situation. The chairmanship was in the coordinating committee, and the people in the master's program didn't have a chance. It was very interesting political structuring of this thing, and it was very hard to protest. How could one? One could sit and talk, work toward understanding. And then what one found was, I don't suppose that I recall going to more than 5 or 6 meetings before a plan was produced. Well, the plan was produced by the Coordinating Council. It was given as a thing ready for approval. It was obviously the work of people who had had a lot of pressure from the Empire Building, from the state universities at that time under Eugene McPhee. The place was going like mad. They all needed good graduate programs. Library science looked great because it was a 1-year program. They could get it in. They could have this on the record. Very, very fascinating. The one thing that happened, the master's programs went in all around the state, was horrendous. And people nationally were saying to me, what did you let happen in Wisconsin? I said, I know I was outwitted on this. I just did not appreciate that I needed to bring the leverage of the University of Wisconsin top administration on this. I did not appreciate that that was what it was. And that was my inexperience, and I'm not pleased with that. But what has happened, of course, is that nature has taken its proper course, and that what could survive survived only from quality. And we are now finding that, they're very minor programs in the state universities, with the exception of the preparation of school librarianship. Mm-hmm. And the realities of life to the state universities have come around so that they don't want to give masters because their people aren't going to be hired as much because they're going to cost more. And so that the school systems in the state want the librarians who don't have a master's so that they don't have to pay them as much. You know, I mean, and then they tried to, later using this, the Library Association to move it over so that no school librarian had to have a master's. Well, you know, I mean, what degrading of the necessary and significant preparation of educators using library resources, you know. So what's happened is that quality education programs have persisted at Milwaukee and in Madison. And I cannot speak for the others now because I just have not been in touch. But on the whole, the fading away of the program in Oshkosh, for example, and other places mm-hmm. to reasonable proportions of preliminary preparation, which is what we should have come up with in the plan, has now transpired. Time will take care of some things.
Yes, I was going to say, wouldn't it be nice if it always did it so
That's
well?
That's right. Well, I'm not sure that there aren't some real gaps, but... That's a good, nice little addition
to the merger story.
When merger took place, and librarians wanted to get together and talk, and then we got this mandate, this talking across campuses will be done at the top. We had had this previous encouragement by CCHG, I should go back into real history on this and say that Rachel Schenck, who was my predecessor as director of the library school, had excellent relationships between the Madison School and those in the state universities, because the state universities were not then under pressure to compete with Madison, and they built supportive programs, and maybe we can move to that again.
Good, glad you said that. Well, a question I have is whether, and these are kind of challenging questions. I know some people in library field, over working the library. One is, do your faculty members have experience in libraries? Have they worked in libraries generally?
Things change over years, and I don't believe that we have on our faculty at the present time anyone who has not worked in a library somewhere or other. The debate was hot in the library education profession about 20 years ago as to whether it was essential to have this. Could you teach if you didn't know from firsthand experience? And many people were coming up with the argument, we are a science. We are able to prepare people at the master's and doctoral level right straight through and have them competent in research and able to teach based on this. It hasn't really happened a great deal in other library schools either, and it has not happened here. The sense that your insights derive from the practical experience tutored and nurtured by a research competence has remained, I think, the dominant insight. Time will tell on that one, too. I would not be surprised to see people hired who had never had a working experience in libraries. I have had many graduates who worked through the programs that I devised and advised them on who have not gone into library work, but they are librarians, and they are producing materials for library use. They are providing competent consultant services throughout the country on prison library service, on jail library service, on hospital library service, because they know what it's all about, and they know how to evaluate. So you see, there are people whom we could turn to very well and very reasonably to be on our faculty who would not have had, quote, library experience in the same sense.
Well, what was your own position on it? I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's important that people should have?
I think it depends on the person. I think it would be an innovation of the first order to have a library school with no faculty members with practical experience in libraries. That would be an innovation of the first order. I'm sure we'd lose some things. Chicago did that, you know, back in the 30s, and the University of Chicago Library School was founded on sociologists and political scientists. And they made a major contribution to the field. No question, it was one of the most exciting things to have happen. So it can be done, but you just don't get the same product, and you don't look for the graduates of that program to do the same things that other people do.
turn the.
This is the fourth tape of the interview with Margaret Monroe. Another question is, this was somebody who had gone through library school, not necessarily when, I guess probably after you were here, who said there were four required courses, but one, people had no choice as to who was giving the courses, and that some people were headed for one kind of library work, say public library, and others for an academic library career, and that no distinction was made between those. Was that ever thought about, that there should be some a two-channel career route for training?
Was it thought about in our school for yes. our program?
Yes.
Well, we had one faculty member, Mary Woodworth, who would like to have seen that happen because she prepared school librarians. And I think Mary would have been very happy if she had been given carte blanche and allowed to shape the collection building and the reference and the cataloging courses in a style that would have prepared people strictly for that. In her better moments, she began to see some reason for not doing it quite that way. My rationale on this, and I sold some people outside the library school in the profession of library education on this, pointing out that school librarians don't want to be narrow-based people. They have to work with their colleagues in college librarianship. They have to work with their colleagues in public librarianship. They have to use the professional resources created in general for the control of knowledge. They've got to know. They've got to be able and competent.
Did I say school? I meant public librarians and academic librarians. I mean, those are...
I didn't realize you were. I was using the school example because that is the example that has most frequently been used in challenging this broad general preparation.
Uh-huh.
Now, did we ever think of separating college and public library service? No. And nor do I think that that has been widely considered within the profession. Popular library as against scholarly library, yes, there are some major things there, but no public library that I know of would be willing in a community of any size to settle for being the popular library with no scholarly resources. No. That does not meet people where they are. And at this particular moment, in 1988, it would have been a poor service indeed if we had done that, as the half of the population very shortly is going to have had at least 2 years of college preparation. Half the population. The library's public is an educated public now.
What about the academic libraries? Do they need public library training?
No. They need general library training, and public librarians need general library training. They don't have to take the courses in college and university libraries. They don't have to take the courses in special bibliography. Likewise, the people intending to move to university librarianship don't have to take courses in storytelling or reader services for public libraries. No, that's not their specialty. So we have a core of general courses to be supplemented and quite liberally supplemented by specialty courses that enable people to become specialized in their fields.
Well, this criticism was that the four required courses were not specialized. That is, they were general.
That's right.
And that they weren't useful.
And that's what I'm making the case for.
You think that they are necessary for both?
Oh yes, yes, no question. And even special librarians who are going to work in archives or a special library that deals with historical materials or you name it. They're going to have a general broad knowledge of the structuring of libraries and certainly the foundation course Library and Society, or whatever it's called at the time that it's being offered, is a very important part of that. And it's essential. No, that's my view on it.
But the people who teach it must each have their own specialty. So if you happen to get this teacher, you might get a completely different or quite different course from having another teacher.
Well, one of the obligations of a faculty member teaching what we call the core courses is to build knowledgeability about the range. Personally, I have been a school librarian and a public librarian and a special librarian. I've never worked in a college and university library. That's the only kind I haven't done. And I felt, but I studied them like mad. I read the literature. I knew what was going on. I knew what the issues were and did some research on library skills instruction and so forth. And it's essential, and this is part of the faculty obligation. And most of our faculty have had experience in at least two types of libraries.
Are the students required to do any practical work in libraries while they're taking their degrees?
Oh, that's the old pattern, isn't it? In time past, this school, like all others, had designated numbers of hours that you were assigned to go and work in a library. Imagine that in the old days at this school, and this was a very good school at those times in the 20s and 30s, that there was good supervision. It takes extremely good supervision to do this properly. I came here from a school that had a requirement, not only of an intensive sort, but also provided a final report on the experience that was to be a critical report on the library with the director of the library present. That was the most maturing experience that any student could have. And they made it. They were fantastic. They became good professional critics and able to communicate that without pejorative implications or a sense of personal animosity. And it was great. Okay, we never did that here. I think there are other solutions, and the solution that I preferred personally, and that many of the other faculty have also used, is to have a field project course in which a student devises a study piece that takes that student out into the field, either working in a library or from a library-type base with the community that a library would serve, and have the experience of working in the field as a librarian. Very, very useful, very maturing. It's not a mandate, but I believe, personally, I believe strongly that the field of theory needs to be wedded to the experience of practice, to correct it, to lead insight in it, to enliven it and make it real. Because for people who come to a professional school with no experience and gain no experience contact during training, it's all pretty artificial.
It would be possible to go through library school and not have worked in a library, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And many library schools do not make a major point of including this. Mm-hmm. I think that this library school still continues to recognize field practice, field projects as a valuable ingredient. I know that Gertrude Herman, for example, who's now retired but taught children's literature here for many years and most effectively, did as I did, placed students out automatically. You came to her class and you knew that you were going to be out in the field for some of the time telling stories in various places. And I had people going out and doing book talks and various other kinds of doing community studies. And it's a very relatively widespread practice, I think, in this school, and I think it's a very real strength.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever any thought of having anybody from the library, the university library, teach in the library school?
Well, we did have Lou Kaplan when he retired. Oh, yes, came Lou, over and right. talked for us.
Yeah, that's right.
No longer the director of the university library, he could be on our faculty, yeah. and that was great.
Yeah.
At the same time, no. And when I came here, I met Lou Kaplan almost immediately because I'd had a good contact from Mari Tauber on the faculty at Columbia Library School where I'd gotten my doctorate. And Mari had called Lou to say, Margaret's coming, get acquainted. And we did, and we've worked very well together over the years that I was director in terms of cooperation and understanding of the projects and of the students' use of the library and so on. But no, we didn't try to place our students working in that library particularly. They went and got jobs, sure, they worked in the university library, but not under an internship program.
Mm-hmm.
Nor did Lou try to have people come and teach. We did have the state archivist teach for us, and we have not ignored these things, and a great many people have come in and given lectures and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you said you, or you more or less, wouldn't comment about the library, is that right, about any of the
I didn't make any attempt to be knowledgeable about the university library. I'm not, as I said, I've never had experience working in a college university library. That's the one field that I don't have experience in. And it would ill become me to set myself up as a person on the faculty to do that. Now, Jack Clark, who was on our faculty, had worked on the Memorial Library staff before he went to head the Eau Claire University Library, and then came here from that experience. And Jack knew a lot. All right, the students were getting that through Jack Clark, and then Jack would take them over, and Lou would come in and talk, you know, and that was done. But was there an analysis done? Was the library school turned to? No. The library school was not turned to by the university library, nor by the Madison Public Library, nor by the school library system to do an analysis of their libraries.
Hmm.
It's the rare local library that doesn't feel threatened by a library school.
Hmm.
It's a rare one. And we probably were much better off not to get involved in that, in a way. It would have been good in another way to have done it. I think of the experience that at Wayne State University, where Genevieve Casey had done, but she had done it not in the local library, but in a neighboring community.
Yes.
Very important.
Do you use the library here?
Do I personally now, in my retirement, use the university library?
Yeah.
I have difficulty moving about so that I don't personally go. But when I have projects, yes, indeed I do, and I hire students to work for me and sometimes with me, and I go to the school social work library, the places that I can have reasonable access to.
Not Memorial.
And but Memorial, I telephone all the time.
Mm.
And yes, people go and make searches for me. And I'm just about now to undertake a project where I shall be having searches made by university library staff.
I just wonder if you had any comment on the way the computerization of the library is going.
No, I have none, unfortunately. I'm no use to you.
All right.
And I'm not trying to conceal anything. I just don't have anything useful to say.
Well, I think maybe that's it. No?
This hasn't anything to do with you, has it?
No, no, no. And
Maggie
it kind of
want
looks
to move.
Well, I don't want to move right away. But I think we probably have to move out because didn't they say downstairs that we had to be out by 5 o'clock?
I don't know, did they?
Yeah, in the parking area. I don't know what they've got coming.
Heavens.
Something or other.
Well, I didn't know about that. Well, thank you very much.
Well, this was fun to do. Is it useful?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good. Good.
I'm glad you brought up this list of things.
Do you want to keep that
yes,
for
I will.
Helpful mm-hmm. For indexing?
Close this line.